Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, The Book Show. This is our first show of the new year. Happy New Year, everyone. And I am delighted to wish a Happy New Year and to welcome our panel. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. Her blog, thelongestchapter.com, is very important to anyone who likes to read. Michelle Herman is Professor Emerita of Creative Writing in the Department of English at The Ohio State University. She is an author. She is a dancer. She is an advice columnist. And she always has a lot to say, including giving advice, which is wonderful. And Chris Hickey is here. Chris Hickey is the Youth Services Director at the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library. I'm getting that right? I'm getting a smile.
Manager. But okay. I'll take the promotion if you want to give me one.
She's the director. Write this down. And she comes to us every month with the quick picks from the library, those books everybody wants to read. Chris Hickey will tell you how to skip the line. And without further ado, I'm going to ask for recommendations. It's very cold outside. It's very gray. What I like to say when I'm on Classical 101 is stay in, stay tuned to Classical 101. Stay in, stay tuned. Get a book, get some tea, get a sherry, and just cuddle up with a great book. It's that time of year. So cuddle up, Cassie Rose. What do you got for us? What are we reading?
I just finished a book, a novella that I loved. It's called A Long Winter by Colm Tobin. And, yes, the Irish writer of Brooklyn and the one that came after that, Long Island, that came after that. A Long Winter it's just a good, comfortable read. You love the characters, because I think it's mostly about their relationships. But it takes place in the Catalonian Pyrenees, and it comes from the viewpoint of a boy named Mikel, and he has just come home from military service. Actually, he's been home for about a year or maybe. And his brother is going to go. There isn't a war on. You don't get that sense. It's just they have to do their duty. And they're all going into town for the younger boy to get his hair cut. Meanwhile, there's something that is off about the mother. And Mikel notices this. And he doesn't know what it is. It's just that she is energetic. And then she's depressed. She's up. She's down. There's something going on that he notices. When they get into town, and I need to be careful here because I don't want to give too much away, he discovers why. And after they leave town, I'll say that as they're getting ready to leave, the mother says to the father, I wasn't able to get any of the oil, the heating oil from the grocer, so he's going to deliver it in the middle of the week. And the father says, well, let's go to another grocer. And she's like, no, I've already paid him. Now, that will make sense and to you as a reader and as you go forward. Again, I don't want to give anything away. But what happens is that there is a confrontation and she feels misunderstood. It's kind of one of those things that she's suffering from something and she feels that her husband misunderstands her and she leaves. So she disappears into the mountains and they don't realize it until a couple hours later and there's a blizzard that is happening. So the story is about her disappearance. It's about the relationship between the father and the son through the winter, how they cope, the solution for that, which is actually a very warm-hearted and charming part of the novel, I will say. And you are drawn into it again because of the characters, it's not really the suspense of what happens to her because everybody thinks that she's gone to be with her brother in the mountains in another village. But of course, the blizzard, they can't imagine that she's gotten through it. But for us, it's just this, it's kind of, Christopher, what you're talking about, the kind of book that you want.
Put on your slippers.
Yes, on your slippers, sit in front of the fire and read this book and how Colm Tobin just takes you into this world. Now, he writes an afterword and he explains how he came to write the book, the environment that he was living in at the time and where he was inspired by the story. Now, that's because it had been published long before, which is an interesting, it has interesting provenance, I will tell you that. And they brought it out recently so that it could stand alone, and it indeed should stand alone. It's a fabulous story.
That's A Long Winter, our prescient title right now. Mm-hmm. And music by Comte Taubine. I said music, didn't I? I'm still in the other side of the hallway. A book by Comte Taubine. Yes, a recommendation from our own Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, the book show. Hand me a quick pick, Chris Hickey. And what is a quick pick?
So a quick pick, these are the hot books that have long hold lists. And the idea is that you will walk into one of our buildings, you will see this display, and the book that you're waiting for might be waiting for you. You can check that out and you can skip the line. And you will definitely want to skip the line with this next book because it has more than 1,600 holds.
Wow.
Yes.
Maybe you should buy it.
You know what? I actually tried to buy it a few weeks ago and it was sold out everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. So this is just kind of, all right, I've set that up. Let's tell you what the book is. So this is The Correspondent by Virginia Evans. And Cassie, we were saying it's a sleeper hit. Mm-hmm. So we didn't really see this coming. And then it ends up on all these, you know, best of 2025 lists. It's a debut novel for Virginia Evans, and it's an epistolary novel. So our character, her name is Sybil Van Antwerp. And she is in her 70s, and she is a fantastic letter writer. And she corresponds with friends and family, but then she also corresponds with Ann Patchett and Joan Didion. And at the beginning, I'm thinking, who does this lady think she is that she's like writing to Joan Didion? But we learn more about that as we go on. I love this kind of story because it is a piecing together of who this person is with you're not seeing the whole picture. You're just seeing these snippets. And it's like, it's that, you know, pebbles in the forest kind of storytelling where this book builds and we get the bigger picture of who she is. And she's different with different people, which made me think about how, you know, we are who we are perceived by other people. So we are different people to different people, which I thought was fascinating. She is also writing a letter that she never sends, and that is sprinkled throughout this book. We don't know who she's writing to, but they are unsent pages, and you will find out at the very end.
Are you in reading it now, a book that has that waiting list? Are you in the middle of
it? I finished it last night.
You finished it last night.
I cried in parts of it. So, I thought it was...
Christopher wants you to slide it across the table here and give it to him.
So having finished it, is it deserved to have 1,700 people
waiting? I do think so. I did. At first, I wasn't sure. I'm like, okay, this lady writes letters. But it just became fascinating.
And it's sold out if you want to try
it. And maybe it's back in stock some places. I haven't checked.
Correspondent by Virginia.
The Correspondent. It has birds on the cover. And Ann Patchett calls it a cause for celebration, which she's in it.
Yeah. Virginia Evans is the author. That's a recommendation from Chris Hickey. You know, get on the list at the library. You'll get it by July, and we'll talk about it then. But good. And Michelle Herman, what do you have for us to read?
So I'm going to switch out my order here because Chris talking about the accretion of details and people being different with different people made me feel that this was the perfect segue into this new novel. Have you read it yet, Audition?
It is a quick pick, though.
Yeah, it's so many people told me to read it. And so I got on the list for it and eventually got it. It's a really interesting novel. I can't say that I loved it, but I was totally fascinated by it. And that doesn't happen that often. So I like to say as little as possible about books, as we know, and just say, just read it. But I want to make you interested in reading it. The book is split in half. The protagonist is the same. And in one half of the book, this woman, who is childless, spends the entire book in the company of a much younger man who you find out, this is why I don't talk about books, because I don't want to give anything away. You find out after a while what their relationship is. And it's very mysterious for quite a bit. But I didn't get impatient with that. I was thinking, oh, they're embarking on an affair, maybe. You find out what their relationship is and isn't, And it's so rich and complex and interesting. And then it ends. And in the second half of the book, the woman, you're going through an alternate version of her life in which she did have a child. And but the same characters who are talked about in the first half appear again. And you get to the end of the book and it almost feels hallucinatory, like you have lived two really full lives with this same character. And I finished it and I thought, I've never read anything quite like it before. So I recommend
it. Coming from you, that's saying something.
Yeah. I've read a lot of books. It's I think the reason I didn't fall in love with it is because I was so invested in the first story that I was disappointed when it ended and the second story began. You know what I just realized it made me think of? Now I'm not going to remember the name of it. That novel that kind of took the world by storm by one of Philip Roth's girlfriends. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about, yes.
She wrote for The New Yorker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a wonderful novel, a very surprising novel. And I remember at first feeling the same way. I mean, it's a very different book. Does anyone think of the name of it?
Because this is Marcus terrible. Will look
Marcus
it up
will look
us.
It up for
He's
us.
He's looking it up for us.
But I remember, you know, getting to the end of that story, and then it was a different story and thinking, oh, no. But then the other story took over for me. So I guess in that way, that's the one thing I can think of that's like it. Anyway,
I think her first name was Jacqueline, the woman, Philip Roth's girlfriend.
I don't remember.
Okay,
I just remember that I expected it to be bad.
Okay.
And I read it with a kind of, yeah, sure, Philip Roth's girlfriend. And it was terrific. And she hasn't published another book since.
Oh, all right.
Anyway, this is Audition by Kay. Audition, the protagonist is an actress, a very well-known older actress. And like the author is Japanese-American. And the book was published last year. So Audition, Katie Kitamura.
And probably a great older actress, probably Meryl Streep will option for a movie. Okay. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. We will be right back with more. Don't go away.
WOSU is powered by you, our community of listeners, viewers, and partners. We know the media landscape has changed, but we remain committed to delivering trusted journalism and inspiring stories across Ohio. No matter when, where, or what you listen to, we'll be here, rooted and connected to this community. Visit WOSU.org/support and partner with us.
This week in This American Life, 10 months after the fall of the brutal dictatorship in Syria, a group of Syrian comedians decides to go on a national tour. But it is really not clear what they can say with their newfound freedom, or what's still going to get them in serious trouble.
I don't think something bad will happen to us. Nobody cares about us. I'm not George Clooney. It's a few people telling some jokes. Let them.
Turns out, some people don't want to let them. That's this week.
Saturday at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Columbus City Council has invested millions to revitalize downtown and support minority-owned business growth. In fact, founded in 1881, the nation's oldest and largest Black-owned business is located right here in Columbus. We're looking at how more Black-owned businesses are being grown in our city. That's Monday on All Sides with Amy Jarovich from 10 to noon on 89.7 NPR News.
We are back. This is All Sides Weekend, the book show. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose, Michelle Herman, and Chris Hickey. Okay, Philip Roth's girlfriend is Lisa Halliday, and her novel, Michelle Herman, was referencing as Asymmetry. Thank you, Marcus Charleston, our producer, for looking that up for us. So, Let's go back to some quick picks from Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library.
Well, we have a new Colleen Hoover. So Coho is back with her first new novel in Coho. This is her first new novel in 3 years. And it's based on a novella that she wrote in 2020 called The Saint. It's part of an anthology called One More Step. So it's not the same story. She's taken it, she's expanded it, she's taken it apart, put it back together, and turned it into a novel. So Colleen Hoover's books kind of fall into two categories. She has her romance novels and she has her thrillers. So romance, like It Ends With Us, thrillers like Verity. Reviewers are saying they like it even better than Verity. And Verity is a big deal. That film is coming out this year. And yeah, they love it. So Hoover says this is her darkest book yet. And the main character is a writer who has writer's block. And Colleen Hoover says, do not read into this. This is not about me. Do not. And she even she's like, don't even go there. This is not about me. This is 100% made up. So it's about a famous writer named Petra Rose. And she's many bestsellers. Her beloved novel becomes a film that they just... It was a flop, and the fans are furious, and they're calling it a betrayal, and they just rake her over the coals, and she's semi-canceled at this point. So when we meet her, she is driving to this cabin where she's going to hopefully find inspiration, write another book so that she can pay her mortgage. And on the way there, she listens to a podcast, a book podcast, and they're talking about her, of course, and... The guest is the producer from the film, who is her nemesis. So she's being trash talked on the way to this cabin. So she shows up at this cabin and there's a man there. So she's assuming that she's just going to punch the code and go in. But the owner is there and there's something off. He's there to welcome her, but I'm skeptical. He's very strange. And the cabin is not what was advertised. So she goes in there to write, and I'm not going to say anything more. But it takes some really creepy, twisty turns.
Why is she so popular? I've never read anything by her, but I know she's enormously popular. Has been for years. Why?
Well, my experience with reading her is her books are, they're page turners, but they're emotionally heavy. They're fraught. Like big things happen, big emotions, and I just feel sucked in by them. And I think that's why people just love it, is they get swept away in the story.
Colleen Hoover, and I know when her books are new, they also have like 1,000 holds on the list.
Yes, this has got a lot of holds.
So just get on the list now. Again, you'll have summer reading. We'll do another show. Cassie Rose is here. Bobby always is book critic. What are you reading? What else are you reading? You read stacks of things every time.
Well, I'm laughing because I can't believe I'm following Colleen Hoover with this book. This is very...
Oh, here we go.
It's completely different. It's 180 degrees. The title, it's nonfiction. The title is called Solitary Confinement.
Okay.
and it is by Christopher Burney. Now, this book was written in the 1950s, but it has been brought back into print. By one of my favorite presses, Boiler House Press, their Recovered Book Series. Christopher Burney was a secret agent for the British, and he was dropped into France during World War II. And 11 days later, he was captured by the Nazis, and he was taken to a prison outside of Paris. So this book is his... I don't want to say it's his recollection of his time in solitary confinement for about 526 days, 18 months about. Now, the thing is, this book is not despairing. It is not heavy. It is not filled with fear and terror. This actually is a contemplative book because I'll first start out to say that when he arrives and he's taken into his cell, he takes a moment and he goes through and looks at everything that is there. Like the mattress, the bed, the blanket, the window, and knowing that he needs to just connect with these, it resonates with him. Meanwhile, he also sets up his routine. The day is cut in half so that the soup and the bread comes in the middle of the day. He holds the bread till night And that is takes huge discipline because he's starving, but it also allows him to sleep at night because he gets something in his stomach.
Oh, yeah.
And his sanity is dependent on his sleep and also on the discipline that he has. Now, one of the things about this book also is that, you know, he talks about the boots outside the door and in the beginning how he is. He's afraid because he knows that he's going to be, he's either going to be shot or he's going to be taken to a camp. So now his thoughts go through, and what we read is about how he contemplates his death. He contemplates, is there a hereafter? None of what I'm saying sounds like, well, this sounds like it's going to be depressing. It's not, because all along of what we get in this book is how he gains to see that the light is stronger than the darkness. He finds that place of peace in life that and tranquility that is monastic, so that he gets to a point where he is so comfortable with the solitude that he doesn't really even want to do the chatting with the tapping on the wall with the other prisoners. Now, there are two times he goes into interrogation, and he has a story that he has to, that he practices. And in the first one, they rough him up a bit, and they do get his real name out of him. And the second one is very intelligent, and they're putting a map in front of him and trying to find, catch him in a lie. And he's very careful, and it's fascinating to read because of how he keeps to the bluff and therefore protects his network. I will say the rest, much of the book is you are reading about times where he just becomes very spiritually pure. And at the end, he does leave. And of course, we know he survives, but he is transported to Buchenwald. Now, he doesn't write about that, but the afterword does continue that. Written by someone else, it gives his biographical details. And it also tells about how he survived Buchenwald because he became so spiritually pure, you could say. I mean, he was had that inner strength, you could say. He understood life in a different way, where he saw the patterns of life. It's just, it's a threshold that we each, that we cross, that's what happens through our life, how he looked at it. I'm a threshold crossed into my future. And instead of looking at the past and looking and letting that drag him down with despair, you could say.
Question, after such misery, was he able to have a life post-war?
He did. The woman that he had met before he was parachuted in, he reconnected with her and they married. There's a scene, she writes her own memoir evidently, and in the afterword, it is written that she gets this phone call, and she's working for MI6 at this time. She gets this phone call and it's him. And he asks her if she wants to go to lunch. And she says yes. And
sure.
she says, how about 1 o'clock at such and such a place? She hangs up the phone and she realizes, I haven't seen this person. He's come back out of nowhere. And I'm like just treating it like it's a normal lunch. So, yes. And he does go on to have, I think he lives, it's into the 1980s, I think.
Remind us of the title and author.
It is called Solitary Confinement, and it's by Christopher Burney, and it is a book that I probably didn't do justice to, but it is it is contemplative literature. It's not war literature. So when you read it, you come away, it's very rewarding, I will put it that, at the end of the book.
Rewarding is good.
Yes, it is.
That's great. Sometimes we need that for a book.
Yes.
And speaking of rewarding, here's Michelle Herman giving us another recommendation.
So this is the book I was going to mention first. It's about another kind of confinement. This one I've got on my iPad. That's where I'm reading it. And it's called Foxes for Everybody by Catherine Pierce. It came out today, which is why I have a digital version. I was just too excited to wait. Foxes for Everybody, the subtitle is 24 Hours of Early Motherhood. And Catherine Pierce, full disclosure, she was an Ohio State MFA student many years ago, so I know her personally. She's a poet. She was a poet here and has published numerous books of poems since she was the poet laureate of Mississippi, where she and her husband both taught creative writing for years. The book it's nonfiction, and it's organized around the hours of the day. So there are 24 essays about early motherhood, and it is so beautiful. I'm not finished with it yet because I started it early this morning. It's a book that kind of explores the marvels and the horrors and the ridiculousness and the surprises of parenthood. And I've been revisiting this in my mind. You know, my daughter is in her 30s now, but she is talking babies, and I am preparing myself for not too far in the future grandmotherhood. And this book, I think, could become one of those sort of classics of early parenthood, like Operating Instructions by Anne Lamott, mm-hmm. which is such a delightful, and like this, delightful and moving and beautiful. And because Katie Pierce is such a good writer, every bit of it, I mean, the first essay in the book is 1 a.m. The book begins with 1 a.m. And it, you know, it's dealing with, you remember what that's like, right? 1 a.m. with a new baby. And the days seem unbelievably long. But it, you know, each of the essays kind of roves around, and she ends up telling the story of a tornado that she and her husband and their very young baby drove right into and just narrowly survived. Anyway, just a you know, really gorgeous book that ends up also looking at how we experience time, you know.
Yeah. I have a neighbor I'm going to buy that book for. She'll want to read it in about 3 weeks, probably. Yes, yeah. So I'm going to buy that book.
I read Operating Instructions when my daughter was 3 months old. I read it while nursing her, and it was if for everyone out there, if you haven't read Operating Instructions, A Journal of My Son's First Year by Anne Lamott, it's hilariously funny, and very moving, and it ends up like the best personal essays, autobiographical essays. It ends up being about so many things besides the obvious surface matter subject of it. So, Foxes for Everybody, Catherine Pierce.
And it does sound like a lovely gift. Thank you, Michelle Herman, for that recommendation. Okay, we've had Colleen Hoover. We've had a not Colleen Hoover book now that's...
This is very different.
That you and I have both read, and we've talked about it off mic, and what I said after I finished it, I want to hit somebody. You know,
It is a painful... I found this to be a painful read as well. It is Paper Girl, a memoir of home and family in fractured America. This is by Beth Macy, and she will be coming to Maine Library on May 3rd. So if you're interested, you can put... It's a free event, but you can put your...
You need a reservation.
You do need a reservation. So she wrote the book Dopesick. She's a journalist from Urbana, Ohio. And she was spending more time in Urbana because her mother had dementia, and talking to classmates and family members and just observing what's happening in her own community and examining, like, who would she be if she had never left? She grew up in poverty. Because of Pell Grants, she was able to go to Bowling Green State University and pull herself out of poverty. She talks about how the tools to do that have largely been taken away, and that the students she speaks to at Urbana High School don't have the Pell Grants that will pay for the entire tuition. And it is a heartbreaking read.
And what it's an infuriating
it's read. An infuriating read. She you know, talks about the people, but then also weaves in research about what's happening in rural Ohio. So it's aggravating. It's called Paper Girl because she's a journalist, and she talks about, you know, the death of small town newspapers and what that has done to towns. Because it used to be, you know, you would get the paper, you would read the whole thing. I remember that when I lived in Belle Fountain, and Urbana was our chief rival. You know, my parents would read the entire paper, and you knew what city council was up to, and so-and-so got this award, and here's the play-by-play of the Friday night football game. You knew what was happening, and you trusted that this information was correct. And when those things kind of disintegrated,
went away, yeah.
People looked outside of their community to national politics, and that became the focus instead of the things that are happening next door.
Can you talk a bit about Beth Macy's siblings? Because I thought I was very interested in that.
She
went to college and left.
Yes,
she
and lives, her siblings did not.
Did not, right.
And their life experiences are very different. And she talks about her sister. Was it Cookie that
Cookie,
married
the
man?
Cookie, the older sister, yeah.
That married the man from her church.
Right.
She was kind of set up by her pastor.
Right, who abused her daughter.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, yes.
She wouldn't divorce the guy. She wouldn't, you know. Anyway, read the book.
Yeah, she stayed with him, and she talks about, because she knows a lot about the opioid crisis and writing Dope Sick, and how it's different now, where people, you know, it was accidental. You took painkillers for something, and now you're hooked. And what's happening now is people are intentionally taking them to numb the pain of poverty and the horrible abuse that can come with living in poverty.
Well, one of the points about the Pell Grants being taken, all kinds of opportunity that existed for middle school and high school kids are gone.
They're gone.
And there were enough of them back in the day that you could propel yourself forward. And now
she talks about how it's almost like her age group took the ladder up when they were able to get themselves out of poverty. They took the ladder with them, leaving everyone behind.
So Beth Macy is coming May 3rd.
She's coming May 3rd. So you can go on our website and click the RSVP button and you can reserve your spot.
And the book is called?
The book is called Paper Girl by Beth Macy.
Now, we've made it sound really terrible, but I think it's a very important read.
It is an important read, and it is a page turner. It is very interesting. And do you remember when she talked about the man she dated in high school, Bill?
Bill, who did a cold 180 turn in terms of his outlook in life.
Yeah. He was a Bernie Sanders supporter. And then, you know, by reading many things on the internet over the years, became one of the loudest voices about the pet eating rumor in Springfield.
Right.
And then he died because he didn't have health care of pneumonia. And her daughter says, the internet killed my dad. Which is devastating.
Right.
It sounds awful what we're in, but it is a fantastic, important
She's a journalist, and she writes like a journalist, so it is a real page-turner. I highly recommend it. Who's got something happy? Come on.
Happy. Do I
we've
have
got,
anything
we've got two,
happy?
I'm eager to read it.
Two minutes to the next break, so get happy.
All right. It's called The Hitch, and it's by Sarah Levine, and it is about a corgi that inhabits a six-year-old named Nathan because he witnesses a Newfoundland dog, his aunt's dog, killing the corgi, and now he, the six-year-old, is like
this is
barking.
Our happy book?
Yeah, it is. It's supposed to be absurd, and it sounds to me like it's going to be hilarious.
Never mind. I've got one. All right. This is a happy book because I just read a beloved old friend. I first read this book 60 years ago in sixth grade. The Wind in the Willows, Kenneth Graham. So I just reread that on a snowy day. And you know what? If you want a wonderful, feel-good, sit-by-the-fire book, and you want to hit somebody after Paper Girl, pick up The Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
One of America's largest reserves of copper, nickel, and cobalt is underground in northeastern Minnesota. It's never been mined, but the Trump administration is pushing to change that.
The conversation around critical minerals has moved beyond climate change, has moved beyond the environment, and it's all about national security.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. That's on the next On Point. Later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. President Trump wants Greenland for the United States. What do people living on the island think about that?
People here in Greenland are worried about what President Trump is saying. The latest things that he's saying is he can either have Greenland the easy way or the hard way.
Next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon, starting at 1 on 89.7 NPR News.
We'll take a look at how more Black-owned businesses are being grown in Columbus. Monday on All Sides from 10 to noon on 89.7 NPR News.
WOSU transforms how we see our world through music, education, and stories that connect us. Help keep that vision and WOSU's mission to engage, inform, and inspire Central Ohio strong. Meet the moment and secure WOSU's future. Visit WOSU.org and give today.
We are back. This is All Sides Weekend. This is the book show, our first book show of 2026. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rhodes, Michelle Herman, and Chris Hickey. And I called out for a funny book or a fun book, Chris.
This one's fun. Okay. This is fun.
This is a quick pick from the library.
This is a quick pick. It's called Meet the Newmans by Jennifer Nevin. And she wrote the bestseller All the Bright Places from a number of years ago. This is very different than that book. This is like a coming of middle age discovering feminism story. So it takes place in 1964. So kind of like Lucy and Desi, the Newmans are a real family, but they are a perfect black and white version of themselves on TV. They've had a 12-year run. They are beloved. Dinah is the mother. She's held up as like the paragon of womanhood, like she, the pearls, the dresses, the nutritious meals. In reality, she doesn't know how to cook, but she pretends that she does. And people just, she tells everyone how to be the perfect wife and mother, even though she's an actress. And she is a good mom, like, but not what she's putting out there. So their show is getting canceled after 12 years because it's 1964. The 50s are over and people are tired of this particular trope. The husband's name is Dell, and he's the father. He's the producer and director. He's written all the episodes.
He's Ozzy. I'm dating myself now.
Yes, absolutely. And he's in a car accident, which puts him in a coma. So Dinah and her sons, Guy and Shep, have to figure out what to do with these final episodes. And can they save the show? Who knows? So Guy is their golden boy son. And he is gay and he's in love with his roommates. So another actor named Kelly, and, you know, they go out on the town and they're like, oh, look at the bachelors. They're out on the town. It's not a safe time for him to come out at that
it's
time.
It's 1964.
So no, he's not going to do that. Shep is the younger son. He's like a rising rock star and he's just dying to get out from under his father's thumb. He wants to break free. And does some things that gets them into a little bit of trouble that kind of hastens the end of their show. And then we also meet Juliet, who is a reporter for the LA Times. And she deals with horrible misogyny in the newsroom. It's awful. And she's sent to write a puff piece about Dinah. So she goes to the home. They butt heads. And she basically blames Dinah for the state of how women are treated today. So she's asked to leave, but she leaves behind a copy of Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, and Dinah reads it and has, you know, an epiphany. And then she goes on a mission to save the show, write these final episodes. She brings Juliet back and they write these final episodes together.
I thought she was going to pull a plug on Dell when she...
No, and here's the thing about Dell is that she could make him a bad guy, but she doesn't. She, you know, he's very three-dimensional and has thoughts, but also is open to things. So he's not the bad guy. And that might have been the easy thing to do, but she doesn't do that. And it's the relationships between the family and, you know, the perception of them because they're, you know, Lucy and Desi. But it's really good. It's a happy ending. It's a fun book.
We needed a fun book. Meet
fun.
The Newmans by Jennifer
Nevin.
All right. That is a quick pick at the Columbus Library. Get your name down there and get it as soon as it's available. Oh, talk about sometimes the quick picks are on the shelf.
Yes. So the quick picks, so we have displays in every building. And it's usually towards the front of the building. There's a sign. You can't miss it. And there's the same, when they're released, the same books are put in all the branches. But, you know, they float around and things like that. But, yes, you can jump the line. So you might walk in and see Meet the Newmans.
I may go tomorrow and look for it. All right. This is All Sides Weekend. This is the book show. Cassie Rose, what else are you reading?
I'm going to recommend a classic, Muriel Spark, The Mandelbaum Gate. I love Muriel Spark's books. Most people know her for The Prime of Miss Jean Brodey and Memento Mori. This book is takes place in the 1960s, and there is a guy named Freddie who is at the Foreign Office. He's in Jerusalem. He spends his work days Monday through Friday there at the Foreign Office, but then he goes through the Mandelbaum Gate, which at that time was the border gate you had to go through to get to Jordan. And he would go over to Jordan and spend the weekend with his friends. So this is an intriguing book. It's got mystery to it. It has great characters to it. It's not funny, but it's one of those books that you can't put down. Because enter in this character named Barbara, and Barbara is half Jewish, half Roman Catholic. She wants to go on a tour of the holy places in Israel and in Jordan. She has all the papers, birth certificate, passport, she's British, that hides her Jewish heritage. And because at that time it was, and at least in the book it says, that it was illegal for Jews to be in Jordan. So you could be arrested because they would think maybe you were a spy. So she just sort of brushes it all off. And meanwhile, there's another layer. She has a fiance who's working on the Dead Sea Scrolls in Jordan, and he needs to get an annulment because of her Roman Catholic side. And so she kind of wants to go and see him. And meanwhile, there's a woman back in England who is at her school, who's the headmistress. And the two of them are in their 40s and does not know that she has a fiance and thinks that the two of them are going to work together and then retire together and be spinsters and on. So when she finds out and she comes to Jerusalem. So there's all of this stuff going on. And then what happens? And Muriel Spark has this way of, like, she will jump ahead to the future and she will tell you something and then come back to the present. So she really kind of knows how to rank it up on you to get you intrigued. And what happens is that suddenly you find out that Barbara has gone over to Jordan and the holy sites and she's disappeared and Freddie has lost his memory. So you're at that point and you're maybe about halfway through the book. I loved it. And I wanted to also read it in this vintage paperback that I found just because of the way that the cover looks and the way that the pages feel and the way that it smells.
You used to buy those books in the drugstore back in the day.
Exactly, that were on that little spinning.
Yes.
Muriel Spark has, if this book doesn't appeal to you, you can get online and research or just read what her other books are about. She is just a guaranteed good read. And there also is last year, The Electric Spark was a biography that came out about her that got rave reviews and hit on some of the 2025 nonfiction best of 2025 books. And that I really want to read after having read this.
The Electric Spark.
That's her biography that just came out.
That's a recommendation. The Mandelbaum Gate by Muriel Spark, recommended by our own Cassie Rose and Michelle Herman. You're up.
Okay. You know me, I like themes. So this next book is another nonfiction book about parenthood by a poet, Raising a Rare Girl by Heather Lanier. And I have it digitally because I downloaded it this morning because I realized I have bought this book so many times and given away every copy of it. Now I'll have it permanently. But reading Katie Pierce's new book made me think of this one again. It was published 5 years ago, and it's one of those books that sounds like it's going to be a downer, but is absolutely the opposite of that. So Heather Lanier's, I want to make sure I get this right, Heather Lanier's, when her daughter Fiona was born, she discovered that she had a very rare genetic disorder called Wolf-Hirschhorn syndrome. And the memoir, to kind of describe it in general, kind of goes through her journey from the perfectionist expectations that so many of us have when we're pregnant. We're going to have the smartest baby, the perfect baby. We're going to know all the right things to do, to embracing the joys, however unexpected, and the challenges of raising a child with significant developmental delays. I'm dealing with the medical establishment who completely dismiss this child. I mean, until she finds the right doctors. The book ends up being about unconditional love and completely redefines what it means to be a good parent. I read the book when it first came out. I read it in galleys, actually. Heather is another person I met originally because we have such a good MFA program here, because she was a student here. The book, I know this is going to sound, this sounds counterintuitive. I have given copies of this book to pregnant women again and again, because it's as if you think when you're pregnant, if you think about the possibility of your child being born less than perfect, it's terrifying and seems like a nightmare. And Heather, and now the child she talks about in this book is a preteen in real time. And Heather's life with her and with Fiona's younger daughter, who was born in a typical way, is a beautiful life. And the book, because the book looks at the way we think about what we not only expect our children to be, but who society insists that they have to be, and is so... The book is so generous and so loving, and such an expansive view of being a parent that I wish I'd read it when I was pregnant, and I will give it to my daughter. I'll buy another copy and give it to my daughter when she is pregnant. I really think it's, yeah.
I have a question.
Yes.
You're talking about books for either... gift ideas for expectant mothers.
Or I guess I am. I didn't realize that.
But my question would be, as you read these books, are there threads in common of the outlook of raising a young child or being with a baby and a young child, or are there differences, discernible differences in outlook?
I think there are as many differences in outlook as there are differences in people. I'm just, as you asked that, I started thinking about the books I've loved best about parenthood. There are a lot that I really disliked. You know, I read them all. Another book I can't think of the name of, and this is going to be too hard for Marcus even. There's a book, I think it's called The Big Rumpus, and I'm hoping Marcus will check us on that.
The Big Rumpus, Marcus.
The Big Rumpus. It's by a woman who's a zine writer, and it is a hilariously, like every single page is like laugh out loud funny about being a parent of young children. That was one that I loved. I've already mentioned Anne Lamott's book. I think a really good book about being a parent requires the
sense of humor, first of all.
Well, yes. But also, you know, the kind of owning yourself, who you are, right? You know, Rachel Cusks, who is notoriously cool, I'll say, cool in the chilly sense, has a book about being a mother, the name of which I'm also going to forget now. That is, has a completely different take on it. That is bracing and talks about all the really lousy parts of being a mother in a way that you would think would have offended me because I have loved motherhood so much. But no, because she taps into that other stuff, yes, that we don't ever talk about. So no, I think what they all have in common is these are, and I'm only talking about books by women, that they all really love being mothers. That's what they have in common. Raising a Rare Girl by Heather Lanier, I recommend to everybody, actually. And again, it's gorgeous writing. So
Gorgeous writing, gorgeous kids. There are snapshots of my mother, because I'm of a certain age, where she has a drink in one. She's pregnant with me, and a drink in one hand, and a cigarette in the other, and the rosary beads in this, and that's it, you know. And that's how it was for many. Don't do that. The rosary beads are fine, but the rest, no. Oh, another Halliday. Thank you, Marcus. Sorry, The Big Rumpus by
Ian Halliday.
Yes.
Marcus, what would we do without you?
Thank you.
I highly recommend that one.
That's our producer, Marcus Charleston, who, by the way, is starring in Opera Columbus's upcoming production. But that's another conversation. Chris Hickey, give us another quick pick from the library.
Okay, this is another
happy one.
thriller on the
All
run.
All right, okay.
So fun. Laura Dave, she wrote the book The Last Thing He Told Me, which is a huge hit. It's actually a show on Apple TV right now. This is the sequel and prequel called The First Time I Saw Him. So you definitely need to read the other book first, or this won't make sense. And there's not a hold list on that one, so you should be able to get the first one very quickly. So this is about a woman named Hannah. Her husband, Owen, goes missing. And he's only left a note with two words that say protect her. And he's talking about his daughter, Bailey, her stepdaughter. And so this is five. They just go on this mission to try to find him, and they're
in danger. Wait, I just want to clarify. Chris asked for a happy book, and you're talking about
this is
all
I have.
Oh, no, it's fun.
It's a husband who leaves.
Yes. Well, I mean, he didn't want to leave. There's a reason.
Okay.
He's also somewhere.
We have 2 minutes. Fun.
So they're on the run. This is 5 years later, and also, you know, years in the past, so you get to know more about Hannah. They're on the run. Things are ramping up, and now they have, like, some impressive black ops skills. So, fun page turner. They're on the run.
Something we all want.
Owen is left behind.
And husband gone. See, that's
it will
the message
take you
I'm
out
taking.
Of your head.
Husband
just,
gone.
I
happy
just
news.
Lost control of the show.
Just setting to Paris, running along the California coast. There's a mob boss grandfather. It's fun.
Oh, mine was.
No, I'm sorry. A mob lawyer grandfather,
not
a mob boss.
The First Time I Saw Him, which is a novel by Laura Dave, but you have to read what first?
You have to read the Last Thing He Told Me first. So this is book two.
What was the last? Well, I guess that's
Protector
the question.
Protector was the
Protector
last thing he told me.
The last thing he told me. That is a quick pick from the Columbus Library. Chris Hickey, thank you so much for providing that. And also, it will turn up on the WOSU Facebook pages, and that's thanks to Chris Hickey and her colleagues. Thank you for doing it. All the books we discussed today with links to the library, mm-hmm. whether there's a wait or not. Thank you, Chris Hickey. Thank you, Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. TheLongestChapter.com is Cassie's blog. Don't miss it. Thank you, Mother Michelle Herman. we're working on grandmotherhood. I know that. Maybe by the time you're back next month, you'll have news for us. Who knows? Anyway, I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. My thanks to Chris Johnston, who makes radio for us, and Marcus Charleston, our producer, for being the adult in the room. Thank you, Marcus. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep. When you